F1, number 13A.
Now, let us reason once more on the subject of the first triad of Hosea, Joel, and Amos. For instance, Amos was the first writing prophet before Hosea and Joel. And so we could ask ourselves, why didn't they put Amos in the first place in the canonical writings? Why did those editors, who must have been the most spiritually minded people, why did they put Amos at the third place and not at the first place? Because all the theologians of today like to put him on the first place. Thanks God our theologians don't handle the Bible. They can't touch it anymore. They would make everything upside down because they always think historically and never spiritually. But the Bible has been written for spiritual teaching, and so just let's see what the theologians would have done if they had put, say, Amos first and afterwards only Hosea and Joel. See, if we spiritually would start with the law of Amos, with his prophecy and with his law, if we would start really there where we have been doing our exercises yesterday night about the law of Amos, we would be in great danger because of two factors which would not be solved. If I don't know anything else but the law of Amos and start handling evil or start giving a treatment, say, along the law of Amos, then what would I do? See, Amos says, God is mine, and mine is a law of annihilation to everything unlike mine. And I would start somehow with the feeling that there is the divine mind, the Lord, and that there is something unlike divine mind. I would have, so to say, a concept that there is God and that there is evil, and that this God must destroy something evil which is. But Joel has been before. Joel has given us the sense before, you see, that evil really is only a misunderstanding of God, just a counterfeit of God, is not the reality. So because Joel has been before, I handle now, from the standpoint of Amos, I handle evil now as an unreality and not as a reality. Is that clear? Doesn't matter if it isn't clear, I tell it many, many times again, you see. The second factor would be that if I start with Amos and handle evil from the point of view of Amos and don't know Hosea, the law of Hosea, then I handle evil not from the fullness of God, from God and its host, not from the throne of grace, because only Hosea has first taught me that fullness of God, which God says, I am mind, I am the creator, and I express myself always as mind, and as the ideas of mind, as the ideas of creative ability, of power, and of law, and of control, and of activity, and of intelligence, and so on. If I wouldn't know Hosea before I handle evil as Amos, I would not handle evil from the throne of grace and from the throne of fullness of the ideas of God. In other words, with Amos alone, I just would hammer somehow on evil as if it were something. Is that English? Or if it would be something, if it were something. Were something. You see, that's what I would do. And that's what you see so often happen in Christian Science. See, that people just have a feeling when they are face to face with an error, anyway, which they think it is error. Usually it isn't an error. But when they are face to face with what they think is an error, and then they say, well, I can annihilate that, because God can annihilate that. And so they hammer an error. They just deny everything about that error, and deny that that error has no place, and no time, and has no power, and has no this and no that. Well, that is only right if we do that from the consciousness of Hosea and of Joel. Because only then we first fill our thought with what is divine, what with that which is true. Or else we just hammer on error as something. Or as that there is the danger that we make more of error by handling error. See? That if we just deny error all the time and deny until we feel it's a big thing. If we are so concerned with denying error and hammering on it and hammering on it and say you are no power and you are no place and you are no this and you have no method and you have no channel and you have no purpose, that is right, but only as the, so to say, as the third in the sequence, not as the first. If we take that as the first, we don't handle error as nothing from the throne of fullness. And then error becomes always bigger and bigger. So you see how the line of these three prophets is a definite line, a definite order, which can not be sidestepped. Naturally, when we are conscious, and when we are cultured in the law of Hosea, where we just see that whatever is going on always, all the time, every place, everywhere, in every situation, that is mind and its host translating and manifest itself, spirit and its host coming to each one of us in its fullness and just flooding everything in its fullness, that soul comes to every one of us in its fullness, and we know what soul is and how that translates and manifests itself and floods everything with the ideas of soul, then naturally we are full of the knowledge of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. Then, if we couple that with the prophet of Joel and see that everything that seems to be against this positive truth is not something, but is just a counterfeit, a misapprehension, a delusion, a drunkenness, and that therefore evil is never an entity, never a reality, never something, but just a false concept, a misunderstanding of God, then we can come to Amos and say, well, with that sense of Hosea, of the fullness of Hosea's consciousness, and with joyous sense that we know whatever we are going to handle is nothing, is not reality, is not an entity, then Amos makes sense. Then we can handle evil as nothing, but not before. Is that clear? Yeah. See, the sequence of Hosea, Joel, Amos. That there, you see, that's what we begin to find, why we need science. Because you know that science says that science is not a knowledge of lots of truths. If we know a lot of truths, we have not yet gained science. We have just learned truths. Science is that which arranges truths so that they make a consistent and coherent one. That's the That's the office of science. The office of science is not so much a fact-finding activity, but is a fact-arranging activity. And you know how many people have a large knowledge of any subject, say of history or of physics or of this or that, but they may not have the slightest sense of science about it because they can't arrange these facts into one consistent system and whole. So science is that which is a fact-arranging activity or a fact-arranging faculty or whatever you call it. And that is what we begin to see in Christian Science more and more. All these truths which we may consider this week, they have been uttered many times in the church, in the movement, in classes, and so on, and so on. But what we are concerned with is to find more and more the closer relationship and the definite relationship and the definite arrangements of these facts within a whole. For what? Because just as I have now shown with Hosea, Joel, and Amos, we are always in danger if we don't know the relationships. We may somehow fail in our truth if we don't see them in their proper place. So that doesn't mean naturally that if after a certain time or years we have to handle suddenly something and think, well, I handle it through the law of Amos, that I think, oh no, I'm not allowed to do that. I have first to go to Hosea and then to Joel. No, that isn't the case, you see. Once we are trained in the system, naturally we can take everyone right there where it is, because the whole thing has become more and more one in our consciousness. When we then, after a while, begin to handle, say, evil as Amos did, and we just see that mind is just the law of annihilation to everything unlike mind, in our consciousness, there is already established the sense what mind is and how mind expresses itself always, all the time, and has in itself that Christ power that does express itself and does translate itself and does flood the whole universe with itself. We already are conscious then that we know, yes, what we handle is just a misconception and not reality. Joel, you see. So that doesn't mean that for all the years to come until eternity, we always have to follow 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, up to 16. Just as we don't do that in mathematics. But at the beginning, when we were going to school, we had to do it. We had to go right the order until we are trained, until these truths become conscious truths. And the prophet is the consciousness of spiritual facts. So that's one point that is so necessary to see. That we don't just knock at error and beat on error without first having a full sense of truth, Hosea, and without first having Joel, namely the conviction that what we are going to handle is just a misconception of God and not an evil as an entity. Then Amos makes sense. Then Amos is big. Then Amos is right. Then we have gone further to Obadiah yesterday, and Obadiah, the beginning of the second triad, is now showing how these big facts, these general big facts of Hosea, Joel, Amos, how they have a transforming or a reforming power on men, on mortals. Christian Science, which is as it says, translates God to mortals. Now here, in these three prophets, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, we will witness now how this first triad of Hosea, Joel, and Amos are going to transform the mortal. The purpose or the intention is defined right with the first one, with Obadiah. That's in our chart 2A. The purpose of that reformation of man is defined, and Obadiah shows it through the story of Esau, how the Christ comes to each one of us and pulls down the Esau in us and establishes the Jacob in us. That is the Christ's intention towards me. So, with Obadiah, we get a feeling now that this handling of evil, as Hosea, Joel, and Amos has shown it, is something that is concerning me. And that it isn't something which we can think is going on just somewhere only, but must change us. We have seen, how can we enter into the strong man's house except we first bind the strong man, and then only we can spoil his good. That's what Obadiah shows, that the Jacob really can be freed by first binding Esau, the strong man. That the freeing of Jacob and reinstating Jacob in its true place, so that he possesses the possessor, so that Jacob possesses Esau who tried to possess him. That for that we must first bind the strong man, which means that we must see that the Christ comes to each one of us and pulls down in each one of us the Esau. We have seen that law where we just see that the fires of mind constantly come to me, and devour in me everything which is built on the human mind, on human reason, on human will, on the mortal mind, so that everything which is haughty about my own intellect, about my own reasoning, is pulled down. We have to see that for us, We have to see that for us. That mind constantly comes as a fire, burning up in me everything which is unlike this divine mind, which builds on the counterfeit of the divine mind. And it shows how spirit constantly comes to me as the fires of spirit, just searching out everything in me, every false substance in me, every false reliance in me, every false sense of unfoldment and fruit and birth and order in me, and burns it up and leaves nothing, leaves absolutely nothing. Then we can see that soul is constantly coming to me as the fire of soul, as the fire of soul, burning up constantly in me everything which tries to build on the testimony of the physical senses, on human knowledge, which tries to deceive me, which tries to let me down, which is sinful in me, unbalanced, unjoyful, all that. And then we can see how principle constantly comes to me, because principle as an impersonal Christ, just as the other synonyms have, but that is as an impersonal Christ constantly coming to me and wanting to reform me, coming to me and just tearing down and burning up everything which is, does not want to be principled in me, which does not want to be scientific in me, which does not want to take Christian science as a science, which does not want the divine principle to take in its principled sense, that must be burned in me. And I must be willing to let that fire of principle come unto me and burn it up in me. I must expect it that it does it, you see. Then I receive the Christ. And Joel and Obadiah shows that principle does that. Then he shows that life comes constantly to me as the fire of life, burning up everything in me which wants to exalt personality, which wants to exalt pride, which wants to exalt the personal sense of life, everything which does not serve the true life, the one life in me, is being burned up. Then he shows how truth is constantly coming to me as the fire of truth, that it burns as the fire of true manhood, that the fire of true manhood burns up in me the stubble of Esau, all that which has a false sense of manhood and cannot stand, just as stubble cannot stand before the fire. That point where Obadiah says, well, really, Jacob and Joseph are like fire and like a flame, and Esau is like stubble, and the fires of Jacob and of Joseph burn up the stubble of Esau. It's so beautiful to know that one's true manhood, one's eternal true manhood, that which is established in truth, that true manhood is always operating, because truth always operates by itself, and so always operates as that which is doing every time, at every moment, its utmost to burn up in me that which is not which is not true manhood in me. See how unlabored the prophets are. Because the prophets never say, you have to do something. Prophets only say, the Lord does something, and become conscious of it. More or less, the only thing we have to do from our side is the consciousness of it. But it's always, the Lord says, I'm the fire, and I burn up. And then in the loss, it is shown how love comes to me as the fires of love, constantly burning up everything completely, which is not of the same nature as God's nature. So that finally, as it says, the Lord reigns and His is the kingdom. It's just a final touch showing that through that method of the six, we always arrive at the completeness of our manhood, of our kingdom. I just want to go back again to that remark which I made in between, perhaps which is necessary to repeat and to repeat. Namely, all the prophets show the unlabored motion of God. They show that we, out of our own will, can do nothing. They never say, you have to do it. They always say, the Lord does it. It is therefore, like in Amos, the Lord that carries the burden. The Lord is the burden bearer, and He gets rid of any error. And so the word sense, you see, which first comes before the prophets, they tell us, say, now get hold of the right ideas of the word of God. Be first clear in your studying, in your search, and in your approach what is God and what is not God. You have to do that job. Then, when the Christ comes, then all labor is taken away from us, and the labor is all with truth, if it is any labor. The work is with truth. So, during all this week, you see, we may get closer and closer to that Christ standpoint where we begin to be conscious that God is doing the work. And all the evil we have to handle is that we think something else or we have to do the work. And that something else or we don't know how to do the work and therefore fail and therefore we do something evil. So the Christ standpoint frees us completely and says, now once you have seen what God is through the synonymous terms, once you have seen what God is, now you just can see as a prophet, as a seer. You can see and be conscious and dwell on it consciously and with your whole heart and with your whole joy and with your whole adoration. You can see and be conscious that God now has a Christ, that God now has every moment a science of manifesting itself to the point where it wipes away all the misconception we could have, to the point of Daniel where the idea is established in each one of us and we can interpret the universe and happenings as God would interpret them. That's how, where he leads us to, you see, to that point of Daniel. So, Obadiah, see, sets now the tone for the second triad and shows the reformation of men. He really answers a question which in the practice or every student has to handle and will always be faced with it. Namely, so often people will come to you and say, well, you know, I have this and that trouble with this and that person. See, with this and this person. And then perhaps the student will say, or the practitioner will say, according to the situation, we say, well, you see, you just look at that person as the Son of God. Perhaps we would even tell the story of Jacob when he did meet Esau, and when he looked at Esau as if he would see the face of God. Well, I think that's more or less the wording in the Bible. But that's a very dangerous thing. See, every metaphysical statement is dangerous. Everyone. Because every metaphysical statement can be misunderstood. That's something we find out more and more, you see, that we say, yes, what we teach and the science of God is so good and is so secure. But naturally, the moment it is not understood in its fullness and in its place, it has always its danger. And the deeper a statement is, which we make in Christian Science, the more it is in danger to be misunderstood and therefore to be misused and therefore to give false results.